Chapter 54. Germany crushes communism. From April 26 to May 3, 1919, wrote Benoist Mechin, all Germany held its breath, with all eyes on Bavaria. Levin and Levin had just signed an alliance, with their fellow tyrant Bela Kun, all of whom were under the control of Lenin. The Munich-Budapest-Bolshevik axis was going to cut Europe in half. For 6 months Bavaria had been in the hands of a series of demented Jews like Eisner and cold-blooded terrorists like Levin and Levin, sent by Lenin from Moscow. During the night of April 6 these aliens had proclaimed Bavaria a Soviet republic to cries of Los vom Reich. Out of the Reich. This was intolerable to any German. Bloodshed seemed inevitable. For the first time since the end of the war there would be a confrontation of major forces, amounting to some 64,000 combatants. The Marxist-Leninists of Bavaria, in power for 6 months, had had the time to organize a Red Army of 64,000 well-armed men. The odds did not favor Nazca's 4,000. The Communist International which supervised Soviet Bavaria was entirely composed of Jews. This point should never be forgotten when one studies the evolution of National Socialism. Jewish involvement in directing the Bolshevik revolutions in Germany had been overwhelming and constant. The massacres and the bloodshed that had almost destroyed Germany in 1918 and 1919 were organized and directed by Jews. It was a Frenchman of impeccable democratic credentials, not an anti-Semitic German, who wrote these remarkable lines. Crowds waving red flags mount an assault against the government in the name of class war. They try to crush the last patriotic instincts. But these crowds do not act spontaneously. They are led by a legion of militants and agitators. And who are these agitators? In Berlin, Landsberg and Hasse, Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg, in Munich, Kurt Eisner, Lipp and Landauer, Thaler, Levin and Levin, in the Ruhr, Marcus and Levinson, in Magdeburg, Brandeis, in Dresden, Lipinski, Geyer and Fleissner, in Bremerhaven and Kiel, Grunewald and Cohn, in the Palatinate, Lilienthal and Heine. All these people were Jews. Benoist Mechin, L'Armée Allemande, Volume 2, page 216. That these people were traitors to Germany and had almost delivered it to Lenin at the end of 1918 and the beginning of 1919 were facts of history. There is nothing anti-Semitic in recognizing this fact, historical explanation for the anti-Jewish reaction experienced by the near totality of the German people. Lenin spared no expense in bolstering Soviet Bavaria. It was his dagger in the heart of Europe and arms were pouring in. The Red Militias had conscripted thousands of former Russian prisoners who had been freed by the German government. The terrified socialist president of Bavaria had fled in panic with his entire cabinet, leaving his guards to be massacred by the communists. Levin and Axelrod, the Red dictators of Bavaria, set up a system of punishment and reward. The 20,000 Red militiamen were paid 25 times more than other troops, they cost a half million marks per day. The ordinary people in Munich were starving, for them bread had disappeared. Everywhere one could hear the firing squads, salvos crackled in the prison courtyards, the victims' bodies were left to rot in the open. Meanwhile the communist warlords were living it up at the Wittelsbach Palace, there is an incessant coming and going of people, some all dressed up and others in rags. The champagne never stops flowing and orgies last until dawn. The government picks up the tab for it all. Benoist Mechin, L'Armée Allemande, Volume 2, page 285. Money was never a problem. The finance commissar, a 25-year-old former bank clerk, just printed more notes. Whenever money was needed to pay his private army of personal bodyguards, he just went to the city's banks and emptied out the private safe deposit boxes of their contents, which he then distributed. Bavarian President Hoffmann contemplated the looting, massacres and adequate weapons and training. Hoffmann knew Noske was the only man capable of confronting the Bolshevik forces, but he was reluctant to ask for 1,000 indecisive men, but these troops were poorly armed and relied on Berlin for their paychecks. He needed 10 times as many troops, with adequate weapons and training. Hoffman knew Noske was the only man capable of confronting the Bolshevik forces, but he was reluctant to ask for his help, because this would be an admission of his dependence on Berlin. Like Ebert in 1918, he kept changing his mind. Finally, he decided to take on the Red Army by himself. On April 16, 1919, he advanced to within 35 miles of Munich, but near Dachau his troops were promptly routed. After this disaster, Hoffmann let Noske take the initiative. As Reichswehr minister, Noske managed to raise a force of 30,000 men. Many former officers rushed to join as privates. He positioned his troops in Thuringia, on the Bavarian border. A 60,000-man Soviet army awaited them. On April 28, Noske began a systematic campaign of encirclement. The Russians, as Lenin's three Jewish dictators were known, began to panic. As Noske's news tightened, Levin and Axelrod fled to Austria, while Levin went underground in Munich. Only Red Army Commissar Egelhofer remained at his post. He took more than 100 of the most prominent citizens of Munich hostage. A number of them, including 7 members of the racial nationalist Dola Gesellschaft, were massacred in a gymnasium. This massacre would trigger severe reprisals. Noske reached Starnberg, 21 communists were taken prisoner and immediately executed. The next day the ring had closed to within 15 kilometers of Munich. Noske hurled his forces right into the city, where they linked up with students and veterans who had risen against the communists. His troops attacked communist strongholds at the railway station and the Palace of Justice. The last bastion of Bolshevism, the railway station, finally fell, and with it the Soviet Republic of Bavaria. The communists paid a very high price. They were exterminated by the hundreds by their socialist brothers. Noske was a socialist minister, so were Ebert and Skidmann. It was they who had overthrown the imperial government on November 9, 1918, without any consultation with the German people. Ebert and Skidmann, who had trembled at the sight of their coalition partners in action, now ordered terrible reprisals in Berlin, Bremen, Magdeburg, Braunschweig, and Munich. In Berlin alone more than 10,000 people were put to death. It was socialist terror versus communist terror. But it was in Munich that the reprisals were the most sweeping. Red militiamen were executed by the hundreds, as were other communist troops. Commissar Egelhofer was executed on the spot. The Jewish dictator Levin, who had gone underground, was unearthed, court-martialed, and shot. Dead was also the old Bavarian system. Munich would from now on be controlled by Berlin. There would be no more Bavarian army or flag. Bavarian soldiers would swear allegiance to the German constitution. Noske's iron fist had crushed separatism along with communism. The last two centers of insurrection were Dresden and Leipzig. On November 7 the communists had risen in Dresden, Saxony. On November 10 they ousted King Frederick Augustus II and formed a coalition government with the socialists. Unlike those elsewhere in Germany, the January 1919 elections had been favorable to the communists, who had obtained 145,000 votes to the SPD's 45,000. The people of Saxony, however, had refused to go along with strikes ordered by the commissars. The Red Guards retaliated ruthlessly, chasing workers away from factories at gunpoint. On March 10, an absolute Marxist dictatorship was declared and the massacres of anti-state people began. The murder of Reich Minister Nuring, who was visiting Dresden on government business, was particularly gruesome. On April 12, a mob of communists burst into the minister's office to the cries of, "Throw the dog into the river." Within seconds, he was badly beaten. The mob then dragged the minister, bleeding profusely, through the streets toward the Augustus Bridge. He was thrown into the Elbe River. The desperate man tried to swim to the shore. Just as he reached ground, he was shot to death. Nuring's murder belied the charge that violence was a right-wing monopoly. In Dresden, the murderers and the murdered were all of the left. The pink socialist left of Dresden and Leipzig were quick to call Noske, a socialist minister, to do away with their red coalition partners. The Bolsheviks had at their disposal 25,000 Red Guards, 400 Marines from Kiel and 20,000 armed workers. The news of the Munich debacle and the mass execution of communists was most perturbing to the Saxon insurrectionists. General Merker was ordered to march on Leipzig in May. He was outnumbered 5-1, but he was convinced he could benefit from the fear that by now was gripping the communists. As a competent tactician, he used a military leader's two main assets, secrecy and strategy. The destination of his troops and material, convoys, was not even communicated to the railway personnel. In the middle of the night of May 10, Merker's men arrived at the Leipzig Central Station. They fanned out across the city and took over. There was practically no resistance, only two were wounded. The Bolshevik commissars and agitators were arrested at the royal palaces and thrown into jail. 8 days later, work had resumed everywhere. After 6 months of communist dictatorship, the people organized a huge parade to celebrate their deliverance. The pure sound of trumpets and the high-flying flags were proof there were still soldiers in Germany. Thus, General Merker had concluded the national reconquest of Germany just as it was about to perish.